I will call the remote this remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is January 12, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. I am a State Representative Rick Hansen, and I have the privilege of chairing this committee this biennium. Just a few reminders on guidelines as we get started. All committee discussion will go through the chair. And members, this is our first meeting of the year. I'm sure we're going to all exercise some patience. I will try to make sure that things work well as we get accustomed to the technology. If you want to be recognized, please use your raise your hand button. Depending on the version of Zoom you have, it is either at the bottom of the participants panel or on the bottom bar of the reactions button. Yesterday, I was having difficulty because I did not know about the reactions button. So for members on the phone, please use *9, and that should activate a raise your hand symbol. If you are not getting called upon, please send an email to Committee Administrator Peter Strohmeyer from your House account. Please mute yourselves so we can reduce any background. All voting will be done by roll call taken by the committee legislative assistant. Please try to limit the noise of your workspace during the roll calls. Members are expected to unmute themselves from voting and when called upon by the chair. The CA and the CLA may mute members if their mute is left off and if there is background noise. The clerk will take attendance by the roll.
All right. Let's start off. Hansen, Rick.
Hansen, present.
Hansen is present. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, present.
Heinzman, Josh.
Heinzman, present.
Josh, present. Acom, Patty.
Acom, present.
Acom, present. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, present.
Ackland, present. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, present.
Backer, present. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Becker, Finn, present.
Becker, Finn, present. Eklund, Rob.
Eklund, present.
Eklund, present. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, present.
Fisher, present. Green, Steve.
Green, present.
Green, present. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, present.
Igo, present. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, present.
Jordan, present. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Lee, Fu.
Lee, present.
Lee, present. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, present.
Lippert, present. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, present.
Lewick, present. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, present.
Morrison, present. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Tice, Tama.
Tice, present.
Tice, present. That concludes the roll.
Members, a quorum is present. We have about an hour and a half to move through, so I'm going to start now with member introductions. My name is Rick Hansen. I represent District 52A, which is Northern Dakota County, West St. Paul, South St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, and Lilydale. And I am serving as chair of the committee for the second time in a row. Amy.
Hi, everyone. Representative Amy Wasilewicz. I represent District 38B, which includes the communities of White Bear Township, Elwood, North Oaks, and parts of White Bear Lake and Hugo. I'm the vice chair of the committee, and this is my first time on this committee, so excited to be here.
Josh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Josh Heinzman, the state rep in the Brainerd Lakes area, District 10A. Thanks for the opportunity to visit for a second, introduce ourselves, Mr. Chair. Looking forward to a productive session.
I think I'll go forward with asking folks to introduce themselves. So Patty Akam.
Good afternoon, everybody. Representative Patty Akam. I represent the House District of 44B, which is parts of Minnetonka, Plymouth, and the City of Woodland, and excited to be on the committee.
Jamie Becker-Finn.
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Jamie Becker-Finn. I represent District 42B, which is some of the Ramsey County suburbs. I live in the City of Roseville, and this is my third term on the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. This is the only committee I've been on my entire time in office, so looking forward to working with all of you.
Rob Eklund. Rob. We'll move on to Peter Fisher.
Sure. I represent.
Sorry, Representative Fisher. I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, your audio is very difficult to hear. So that must be why Representative Eklund didn't hear his name.
Okay. We'll do Peter and then back to Rob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent 43A, which is the communities of Willardy, Montemedi, and Birchwood, and parts of Montemedi in Washington County, and then parts of White Bear Lake and Maplewood in Ramsey County. This is my fifth term on the committee.
Rob Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And too many years of machine tending in the paper mill may have caused my hearing to malfunction there a little bit, but I'm Rob Eklund. I represent District 3A in northeastern Minnesota. I can't name all my cities, but I'll name my counties. I represent Coochin County, Lake County, parts of St. Louis County, and Cook County. This is my fourth term. Been on the Environment Committee the whole time, and I'm looking forward to another good session.
Sydney Jordan.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sydney Jordan. I represent 60A, and that is northeast Minneapolis and southeast Como. And it's a pleasure to be on this committee.
Heather Keeler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Heather Keeler. I represent 4A, which is Moorhead and Oakport Township. It's my first term, so it's my first time on this committee. I'm really excited to work together to see what we can do for the wonderful state of Minnesota.
Fu Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fu Lee, House District 59A, which is North Minneapolis. I'm really excited to return to this committee for my second term.
Todd Lippert.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I represent District 20B in southern Minnesota. Montgomery, Lonsdale, Dundas, and Northfield areas. Was Environment and Natural Resources Policy last term, and excited to be on Policy and Finance this biennium.
Kelly Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kelly Morrison. I represent District 33B, which includes 10 communities in the Lake Minnetonka area, the western suburbs of Minneapolis. This is my second term and my second time on this committee. Looking forward to it.
Susan Acklin.
Hi, I'm Susan Acklund. I'm from District 19A, which is all of Nicollet County and parts of a couple others. The main towns are St. Peter and North Mankato. I'm about an hour and a half south of St. Paul. And I am a first-time legislator, and this is my, this is the first time I'm on this committee. I'm glad to be here.
Welcome. Dale Lewick.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dale Lewick, represent all of Aiken County and the biggest share of rural Crowing County. I guess this is my fourth term on some form of this committee. It evolves from session to session by name and whether it's policy or finance or both. I'm looking forward to continuing to work on behalf of all the folks in Minnesota. Thank you.
Steve Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Green, I represent all or parts of Mahnomen, Clearwater, Becker, Hubbard, Wadena, and Otter Tail counties in Northwest Minnesota. Glad to be on the committee again. This is be my fifth term.
Tama Tice.
Hi, I'm Tama Tice. I'm from the St. Cloud area, so I represent 14A, which is the west and south part of St. Cloud, Lake Park, in St. Augusta, and this will be my second term on this committee.
Nathan Nelson.
Nathan Nelson, I represent 11B, that's most of Pine County and half of Kennebec County, and I'm not going to name all the cities and everything in there, but my second term and second time being on the committee, and glad to be here.
Spencer Igo.
Hi everyone, Spencer Igo here. I represent House District 5B, so that makes up parts of Itasca and Cass County there in the central of northeastern Minnesota. So this is my first term, so I'm excited to be a part of the committee and look forward to working with all of you.
Welcome. Jeff Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent 12A, which is seven counties. I'm the only House District that borders two states on the west, North Dakota and South Dakota. There's seven counties, 42 communities. So just like Nathan, I won't go through there. Probably one of the, if not the richest, agricultural area in the state. So thank you. And this is my third term on this committee.
Thank you. And we'll start with staff. Peter Strohmeyer.
Hi, I'm Peter Strohmeyer. I'm the committee administrator for the committee. Look forward to the work ahead.
Adam Koppel.
I was previously CLA for corrections. Looking forward to working on this committee.
Amy Zipko.
Hi, everybody. I'm Amy Zipko. I've been with the House for 11 years and have been on this committee the entire time.
Molly Peterson.
Hi, everyone. Molly Peterson, House DFL Research, and this is my first year in House Research, and so my first time assigned to this committee.
Janelle Taylor.
Hi, I'm Janelle Taylor. I'm with the House Nonpartisan Research covering environment and natural resources, and I've been doing that for about 14 years.
Brad Hagemeyer.
Hi, my name is Brad Hagemeyer. I'm with the Nonpartisan House Fiscal and Analysis Department, and I've been working with the Environment Committee for 9 years now since I've been at the House, and I cover part of the legacy funds as well.
And this is where we'd normally introduce interns that would help hand out the paper during the meetings, but as we're operating virtually, that won't happen quite yet. Members, we do have a bill in front of us, and so this would be the place where I would physically hand the gavel off to Vice Chair Wozlawick, but I'm going to do that virtually. So Vice Chair Wozlawick, would you like to take the gavel?
I will take the virtual gavel. Rep Hansen, would you like to move your bill today?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. I will move that House File 30 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
All right, that motion is made. And Representative Hansen, you also have an author's amendment. Would you like to move the A2 amendment and explain the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move the A2 amendment. Members, the bill, House File 30, is the tentative recommendations, suggestions from last year's LCCMR commission. It was the FY20 bill, and it moved through the legislative process last year and was passed off the House floor, but was not signed into law. We were unable to come to agreement with the Senate. Normally, this bill would have been adopted by June 30th of 2020. Therefore, there are a number of expiration components of the bill that need to be moved forward as the bill, if it became law, to give additional time for the projects to be completed. So that is what the A2 amendment is.
All right, Representative Hansen moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author wants. Is there any discussion on that motion? I don't see any hands raised. If there's no discussion, then the clerk will take the roll on that motion.
To the HF30A2 amendment, Hansen, Rick.
Aye.
Wozlawick, Amy.
Aye.
Heinzelman, Josh. Heinzelman, Josh.
Aye.
Acorn, Patty.
Aye.
Acklin, Susan.
Aye.
Acklin, Susan. Backer, Jeff.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Fisher, Peter.
Aye.
Green, Steve.
Aye.
I go, Spencer.
Aye.
Jordan, Sydney.
Aye.
Keeler, Heather.
Aye.
Lee, Fu.
Aye.
Lippert, Todd.
Aye.
Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Morrison, Kelly.
Aye.
Nelson, Nathan.
Aye.
Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, aye.
19 ayes and 0 noes.
All right, with that, the motion passes and the amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, members, for the adoption of the A2 amendment. Members and members of the public, this is the 2020 LCCMR bill. The bill appropriates $61.3 million in FY21 from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. This is the trust fund that was established with the lottery. So it's your loon ticket when you the commercials that you see on television or in print. The majority of the bill includes projects tentatively selected by the LCCMR. It also includes funding for various items from two components. There was a project cancellation from a prior year, and it does not include a tentative recommendation for wastewater treatment grants. This language is from 2020. It was passed off the floor as House File HF 4554 during the 2020 regular legislative session. It was also subsequently introduced in the special sessions in June, July, August, and September of 2020. You may be wondering, why are we here with this bill? We have a lot of work in front of us, members, but we can't really go to the buffet until we clean the plate from last year. And so this is some stuff, and there will be some other bills coming of items that were almost there but didn't quite make it for a reason. And so we're trying to see if we can get this completed this year. I do want to highlight the changes that are there, that particularly funded from the project cancellation, which was a Sauk River Dam cancellation. It's now a transfer. This was a project that had been in a prior year and then could not be completed. So we, in the bill, would provide an additional $249,000 to fully fund the Science Museum study to determine how, when, and why lakes in pristine areas of the state with obvious nutrient loading are experiencing algal blooms. It also, we provided last year some initial money from an emerging issues account to the University of Minnesota to look at how COVID-19 may be moving in wastewater. So this would fully fund $699,000 for a University of Minnesota project to evaluate the ability of COVID-19 and other potentially infectious organisms to travel in wastewater systems, including septic systems to drinking water sources. It provides an additional $320,000 to the Department of Natural Resources for emerald ash borer control efforts, and then provides an additional $900,000 for the lawns to legumes program. The wastewater, what had been in wastewater treatment, we provide $1.095 million to the Public Facilities Authority for wastewater renewable energy demonstration grants. And the model here is we had testimony that the Met Council, they've actually looked at solar on wastewater treatment plants, how you can do more energy conservation. So energy use at wastewater treatment is a large component, and this would be used to try to reduce energy costs at wastewater treatment demonstration grants. It would also provide an additional $404,000 for full funding to the Pollution Control Agency to help with municipal wastewater plants, landfills, and compost facilities protect human health and the environment by developing strategies to manage PFAS, or polyfluoroalkyl chemicals, in land-applied biosolids. It provides an additional $133,000 to the U of M Raptor Center to protect raptors from lead poisoning. It provides a $350,000 grant to the City of Babbitt to expand the Birch Lake Recreation Area, and an additional $118,000 for full funding for the Climate Generation Will Steger Legacy to teach school kids schools as STEM Living Laboratories project. Ms. Becca Nash is the Executive Director from the LCCMR, is also available for questions. And we have various representatives from our state agencies in the waiting room if members have any questions. There are, I believe, some written testimony that has been provided, and the verbal testimony that was going to be provided has been withdrawn. So the written testimony is posted on our site and will be posted as well. And with that, members, I'm open for questions.
Just a reminder, members, if you have questions, to use the raise your hand feature so we can see it there. And I see a question from Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if I should be calling you Chair Hansen when you're not on the chair or not, but I will. So Chair Hansen, on your bill, you know, I see a lot of things in here that I know that you've changed the dates and so you've updated them. But there's a lot of questions I have as far as there's a lot of money in here for universities and in to do studies. And I'm wondering if they're not maybe a little outdated already. There's things that I'm looking at in here where we're going to be giving money to universities and Board of Regents that I think that the data that we're asking them to provide is maybe already there. A lot of it would be in studies that have been done through the DNR. I don't know if anybody else has questions on it, but for instance, the Voyager's Wolf Project, you know, they're going to study the effects that the wolves have had on the deer and the moose. And I think it's, man, at least 4 years ago, maybe more now, that we already got that information on moose depredation from wolves from the DNR. And so there's a lot of money that's going out to that. I have questions on, in fact, maybe I'll just ask that question. Is there anybody here from the university that could tell me what they're planning as far as that study goes? And if they are they consulting with the DNR with the information that they have?
Representative Hansen, I don't know if you want to address that or pull someone else in.
I could start to answer that if there's someone from the U or the DNR here that would provide more detail, but I think the wolf study is really cool. Representative Green, I don't know if you've seen the video of some of the interactions with the wolves that have been posted, and how the packs interact with each other. And one that sticks in my mind is the one wolf that had figured out how to be a very strong beaver killer, that he developed that skill. So I think often with science, we think we've learned it all, and then, oh my gosh, here comes something new that we didn't think we knew, that helps add into the body, that helps us manage. So we're learning new things. We learned the wolves are eating blueberries during some part of the season. We learned that that one particular wolf had developed an ability for killing beaver. We've learned how other animals interact. I think there's a video of a beaver dam of all the animals using that dam for transport. So we may think we've figured it all out, and then here comes something else that provides assistance to us in helping us manage. So, but I would defer to the University of Minnesota or Becca or the DNR.
Anyone else want to take that question on? Otherwise, Representative Green, if not, we'll let you continue. I'm not seeing anybody jumping up here.
Okay, I'll just move on. In the bill, it talks about how they're going to study the effects on depredation for deer and moose. So it doesn't talk about them eating blueberries. I ask these questions every year, but I never really get an answer. So that's why the questions keep coming back. On 4.1 of the bill, we're still going to be studying and trying to develop more muscles. And I'm wondering what we've found out so far. If there's anybody from the university that can tell me, excuse me, this is Zoological Gardens, I guess, but, we're continuing to study this. Are we having problems with in this area? Or, what's the advantage to continue with this? And is there any information that tells us what's been done so far has worked?
Representative Hansen or Ms. Nash or somebody from the zoo, I don't know if there's someone on that could address that question.
Madam Chair and Representative Green, I think there's some materials that we could provide for the committee. I know the commission took a tour there. It's down by Red Wing, and might be a good tour once COVID is gone for the whole committee to see, because it's amazing stuff. And I know there's some printed materials and reports that we can make available before we can do that tour. Maybe we can do a virtual tour for this winter. But Ms. Nash, or if there's someone from the zoo who would be able to answer that directly.
Mr. Chair, I can say just a couple things. Well, we're waiting to see if there's somebody from the zoo here, but I think of this as a good news story. This is reintroducing mussels into streams. These are rivers and streams. These are mussels that were originally there, but who have died off due to prior contamination. It's a good news story because water quality has improved to the extent that these mussels can be reintroduced into their native habitats, and we are having success with that. We have funded this program in the past, and these mussels are actually taking root and populating, and that is good for the ecosystem and good for further improvements to our water quality.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. Representative Green, it sounds like maybe we'll get you some more information too, since we don't have someone from the Zoological Garden on here at the moment. Did you have other questions you wanted to ask?
I'll scale them down, Madam Chair, just okay. Because I know that we may have time issues. Other people might want to ask. But these are questions that are not designed to criticize this bill. I see them in there, and I want to know because I'm out in the landscape a lot, and I see some of the problems that are out there, and I see some of the effects that are both good and bad. But going down to the same page on 4.33, it talks about bobcat and fisher habitat. And I was wondering if there was anybody, whether it's through the university or maybe even Department of Natural Resources, that could tell me what we're seeing in the way of fishers as far as them declining and why bobcats are in there. Because I can tell you from where I'm at, I've seen more Fisher and Bobcat in the last couple of years since people quit trapping, that I'm not sure that there's a problem. And because I'm going to ask this at the same time if the DNR does come up, I do want to know, there's money in here to study the effects of beaver on drought. And I'm wondering if there's a problem with drought in the Voyageurs National Forest and why we're looking into that. And also on the beaver, I've been seeing in the last couple of years, there's a lot of beaver dens that have just collapsed. I mean, they've been abandoned. And I'm wondering if we're seeing a problem there as well. Kind of a long question, but hopefully if we get somebody up, they'll stay up to answer those questions.
Representative Hansen, Ms. Nash, I don't know if there's somebody from the DNR who might be able to help with this too, but I'll leave it open for anyone who...
Madam Chair, I can say a couple words. According to the project managers, the Fisher population in Minnesota has declined by 50% over the past 20 years. And so I think that's what they're trying to figure out with the study is why is that? And is it related to the increase of what they've seen for bobcat populations? The last bobcat study that was done in Minnesota was in 1982. So they are working with a lack of information here. And that's what the purpose of the study is to figure out why are these populations declining and what can be done about it.
And then I understand that we do have someone from the DNR in the waiting room. I don't know if he'll be able to help us or not, but.
Madam Chair, this is Representative Hansen. I think if I remember the presentation correctly, and Representative Eklund or Representative Heinzman or Representative Tice could maybe back me up on this, but if I remember correctly, there's some unique predation between bobcats and fishers, where bobcats will the female fishers they'll kill them in the den. So that might be, there was some thought that there might be some action there that they had seen. And so this study would help identify that, which then again can help with management.
Thank you, Representative Hansen and Ms. Nash. Representative Green, I see a few other members with questions. Did you have anything?
Yeah, I have two more, Madam Chair, and I'll make them quick. Let's just jump to the back of the bill on page 2017. Where we've got some money going into Department of Natural Resources for land acquisition, and I do question the way this is put together and the method, because it looks like in here that the DNR will be doing its own assessments on the land that it's going to be purchasing, and I'm wondering if they take into account not only the county assessed value but also the market value. Or are they doing a completely different assessment of the properties that they intend to acquire?
I don't know if Ms. Nash wants to take a crack at that. Otherwise, we do have Mr. Meyer from the DNR here as well.
Madam Chair, I didn't hear what project that was a question about.
Representative Green, do you want to repeat what the project that was related to?
Well, it's one project in here, but it's a question on the policy of the DNR that is that actually the DNR is doing its assessments of the land, and the way it looks in here, they are valuing the land and then purchasing the land, and as you know that in statutes there is a law that says they can't pay over 10% of the value of the land. So my question is, how are they valuing that land when they're doing their own evaluations for land they want to purchase? Make sense?
Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chairwoman, I'm sorry.
Yep, Mr. Meyer, go ahead.
Thank you very much. The language in the bill, it may seem rather confusing, but we will follow and apply all of our standard acquisition protocols that we use. There'll be an independent appraisal done via current real estate methods. We'll follow that. And again, we can only pay 10% more above appraised value. I doubt if that would even come into play on these acquisitions, but we'll follow our standard acquisition protocols on this, just like anything else that we would acquire.
And Mr. Meyer, can you just identify yourself for the record and for those of us who may not be familiar with you?
Sorry, Madam Chair. Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Representative Green, did you have additional questions on that?
I think I'm going to talk offline with them because I don't want to belabor this too much because a lot of people won't probably understand what we're even talking about if they're new on the committee. The last thing is there's a lot of references in here to statute 116P10, and it talks about the money from the trust fund. For a quick rundown of that, what that means is if we give money to another entity to purchase land and they make money off that land, then that they have to pay that back, whatever they've gotten from the state, and it goes into the trust fund. And then it can only be used for certain things. But we have a lot of projects in here, but I don't see anything of what the existing money in the trust fund is. So the question is, how much of that money on a percentage-wise does get paid back, and how much is in that trust fund right now from revenues that have been paid back to the fund? And I'll end there.
Yeah, sure. I'm not sure who wants to take that one if we have the expertise here to answer that question.
Ms. Nash.
Madam Chair and members, you're right. The 116P10 is a statute regarding royalties, copyrights, patents, and sale of products and assets. To clarify, and that does say that if the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is invested in a project that generates revenues, we are owed back, said simply, we're owed back the percentage of what we put in. The most common way that statute seems to be applied is with regard to research projects that are developing intellectual property that might lead to a patent and commercialization. Land acquisitions, typically, if ENRTF funding is used, it is for land acquisition that is going to be permanent. And with all of those land acquisitions, there is a deed restriction that is recorded at closing that says that the use of the land may not be changed without permission from the LCCMR. And actually, usually that involves notification of the legislative chairs of the finance committees as well, and it requires a supermajority vote. So we don't see that very often, but at times, if, for example, a utility easement is needed across a property or a minor survey adjustment that results in the property that was acquired being described differently or converted to a different use. Any money that is generated from that transition of land or that sale of that land for a different purpose is indeed returned to the trust fund. I do not have an accounting right now of what amount of funds have been returned to the trust fund over the years, but we can look into that for you, Representative Green. And then for your final question, the trust fund is a permanent fund in the state treasury that is managed by the State Board of Investments. It's invested in stocks and bonds, and a small amount is held in cash in a money market fund. The most recent valuation that we have of that is about $1.2 billion.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. Moving on to a couple other members with questions here. Representative Lewick, I saw your hand go up first, if you want to go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just going back to what Representative Green, he pointed out this Voyager Wolf project, and it's understanding in phase two. I don't know if Ms. Nash or Assistant Commissioner Meyer could just give us a little thumbnail on what did phase two or phase one produce, if anything. And I don't see the words of DNR in that particular section of the bill. And it would seem that the immediate beneficiary would be the DNR, because they handle all these areas, including the moose and the deer hunting management, as well as the wolf management. So I'm more interested in, says phase two, what we get for phase one.
Ms. Nash or Mr. Meyer, Commissioner Meyer-Notcher, who wants to take that one?
Madam Chair, I can try to do that. It is actually an appropriation to the University of Minnesota, and it is for research that the University of Minnesota is conducting in collaboration with the Voyageurs National Park, which is a National Park Service. This is groundbreaking research. It has gotten world attention. The first of its kind study of wolves' behaviors in the summertime. Wolves have primarily been studied during the winter in the past. And so I think Representative Hansen ticked off some of the discoveries when he was talking about this project before, but the first of its kind discovery of wolves fishing for freshwater fish and then caching that fish for later consumption, for them killing beaver, and documenting their reliance on beaver as opposed to other mammals, which was kind of what was thought, that they were predating on deer and moose. But it's been very surprising, their reliance on beaver and their impact on beaver populations and the subsequent ecological impact of the beaver consumption. This is the first of the kind that they have documented wolf pups in their den. I'm trying to think of other things, but this is really groundbreaking wolf research. I know I was out in Yellowstone last year and was talking to the folks who were observing the wolves in Yellowstone, and they knew all about this research, which was quite cool.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. Representative Lewick, did you have any other questions?
No, just a general comment, though. Don't want to break anybody's bubble here, but we've been looking at wolf scat for generations, and it's no surprise that they fish, that they consume beaver, that they consume berries of all types. I would hope the DNR is working very closely with the University of Minnesota to focus this on things that the average hunter or trapper already knows, or at least if you've been involved with the wolf issue. So, we need to stay focused on what goes on out there, but we certainly don't need to go back over and send a graduate student out to look at something we fairly easily have discovered many generations ago about what wolves do in the summertime. So not trying to be a wet blanket on this, but let's make sure we really get bang for our buck on this and not just waste a lot of time out and stay away from the poison ivy, as they say. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Next, I have Representative Heinzman and then Representative Backer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a couple of questions. One for Director Nash, and maybe she can start kind of working on trying to help me understand where things are at. Obviously, a lot of projects that are funded in this package could potentially be affected by continued executive orders that limit persons and closeness and proximity. At the DNR level, of course, we've seen an entire season come and go, and fish stocking is gone. I know projects that will potentially be affected, and I'm wondering if maybe the director could help us better understand how we're going to handle that, and if some of those that did apply for dollars have indicated one way or another of how their project would or wouldn't be affected. I know there was some discussion about that over the course of the last few months. And then a question for the chair. Just wondering, Representative Hansen, where
where this potentially could go. It's pretty unorthodox. And we discussed this together just last night, but just so the committee can benefit to be moving a bill this early. Usually we're going through all kinds of overviews and so on, and I'm sure those are coming from agencies, that's fine. But what's the path realistically for this bill? And then also, is there a Senate companion? I think the members would benefit from a brief discussion of how this thing could go forward or potentially could be impacted. Thank you.
Ms. Nash, if you want to tackle that first one, and then we'll have Representative Hansen jump in.
Sure, Madam Chair and members. I think there was, when the pandemic hit, the University of Minnesota, the DNR, had a little bit of a lockdown, or at the University of Minnesota, the research did kind of come to a halt while they figured things out. But I think for a lot of the projects that we've been working with, they have sort of adjusted to the new normal. Many of the projects that are already funded that have been impacted by COVID, we at a staff level have been working with them to make minor adjustments to their work plans. Most of the changes that we've seen have been just kind of shifting funds around so that they are still able to accomplish their original outcomes. Some of those, I guess the most frequent we've seen have been, you know, meetings that people had planned to do outreach or coordination. Those kinds of things have now moved online. And travel costs have been affected. In some cases, they've gone down because people are no longer traveling. But in other cases, when people are doing research, they've had to at times double up on their vehicles so that people can be spread out more. So their travel costs have increased, but they've been able to balance that fund adjustment within their appropriation. So we have not heard anything from any of the project managers included in this bill to suggest that their projects will not be possible due to COVID or the conditions surrounding COVID, social distancing, et cetera. We know that people have had to furlough staff, lay off staff. In some cases, there have been lost opportunities to retain you know, qualified people on teams because of the gap, you know, that's happened, for example, between a phase that was funded before and a phase that would be continuing in this bill. But we really haven't heard anybody say that they won't be possible. It won't be possible to continue out the work if funding. In fact, we're just hearing people, you know, anxious about the outcome of this bill and emailing us, you know, with concern and hoping that something will happen.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. Chair Hansen, do you want to address Representative Heisman's second question there about the process path?
Sure, Madam Chair and Representative Heisman. I think the two are somewhat related. Following up on Ms. Nash's comment, I know particularly the University of Minnesota Terrestrial Invasives Institute, their research can be greatly impacted by the delay that has occurred because the bill has not passed. And some of that research might include the work being done relating to soybean aphid and its relationship with buckthorn, and how some really groundbreaking research that might be able to solve some problems is at risk because the funding isn't continuing. I know the Pioneer Public Television, the Prairie Sportsman Program, also at risk. People have been laid off or the funding has stopped because the continuing dollars that have been, that are in this bill, did not become law. The path forward, Representative Heinzman and members of the committee and members of the public, when I did the bill introduction, I indicated we've been out with this bill for quite some time and are hopeful. Why did this bill not become law? as we tried to conference this bill along with other provisions, there was a request or a requirement or a demand, whichever you'd like to use, that from the Senate, that the governor's clean car rulemaking be delayed. First it was to be stopped, then it was a four-year delay, and most recently a two-year delay. I was encouraged by an interview with this in the Star Tribune, I believe last Friday, where both Senator Ingebrigtsen and Senator Rood indicated that they wanted to get the LCCMR moving. I also heard from members of both parties, well, why don't we just slim this down, because it was part of a mini omnibus bill. The LCCMR was with a variety of topics, lands bill, CWD, dry cleaners, DNR policy, a number of components in that bill. Why don't we just try the LCCMR bill as it is? The Yellow Jackets, just and members of the public, to give you an indication of the delay and the challenges we were having in COVID times here. I have given the Yellow Jackets to my senator, Senator Matt Klein, to give to your senator, I believe, Senator Kerry Rood, who has agreed to introduce the Yellow Jackets for the companion for this bill. So I believe that will occur on Thursday. We have, you know, with the King holiday coming up, we do not have session. So moving bills out of committee and through Ways and Means will take several steps, may take some time. Getting bills drafted, getting amendments drafted takes time. So as I mentioned earlier, we have some unfinished business from 2020 that I think we could complete. I think this is one component, the largest component in the funding that I think is most urgent. And so we are trying to move it out of the committee today to Ways and Means and then to the floor. It would be my hope that we could conference it. I'm assuming the Senate will probably have different ideas about how to spend the money from the cancellation and from the wastewater treatment, and that we could conference that with perhaps a three-member committee, a conference committee from each side, that hopefully you could be on, Representative Heintzman, and help us problem solve and get this into law.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Heintzman, any follow-up questions?
Yeah, just a little bit of follow-up. Chair Hansen, you talked briefly about the California cars issue, and I do have some concerns that that's going to continue to be a ongoing piece of the conversation, and it may or may not impact this bill, but I would of course like to be a part of the solution there, and representing Greater Minnesota, I think I can speak for a number of the members on this particular issue. That is of great concern. Typically, a lot of those older vehicles that wind up in our part of the state may be impacted, or maybe people's options would be, of course, narrowed drastically by some of California's standards. So I think that it's likely to be something we continue to talk about, and I hope that it can be a potentially positive conversation as we find some solutions, because I don't think that California's solutions necessarily work in Minnesota, but there's obviously things that we want relative to making sure that our environment is kept as clean as absolutely positively available to us, the options. So thank you, Chair Hansen, for working on this, and I'm going to be supporting it. I think it's mostly a good package of bills. Most of us have already supported it numerous times in the past. And my final comment, I guess, would be relative to this discussion would be, I hope that and you brought this up, that there definitely was an impediment because of the difficulties in the discussion around wastewater treatment. And I hope that anybody with any serious questions about that would look at the Constitution and see how the original intent of the LCCMR, or I should say the Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund, was in that it included a element that could support wastewater. And so that's a long ongoing conversation I'm sure we'll be having into the future, but thanks again for your answers, Chair Hansen and Director Nash.
All right, thank you, Representative Heinzman. Next, we have Representative Backer, and then Representative Becker-Finn after that.
Yeah, thank you, Chair and Vice Chair. I have two things. First thing deals with the question. I don't know if Chair Hansen can answer that, or there's someone listening in, but if we look at line 17.1, developing cover crop systems for sugar beet production, is there anybody, this is a second year, is there anybody out there that can talk to what happened the first year? Was it, did something come out of it that was positive, or just is there anybody from the university that could talk about what happened, what's planning for this year for that $300,000? That's my first question.
Looks like Ms. Nash might be able to answer that one for us. Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair and Representative Backer, I think it's just the second year of the fiscal year, the second fiscal year of the biennium. That's where the funds are coming from. But this is the first time that we would be giving funding to the university for this project. So we don't have a prior project with results to report on.
Representative Becker?
Yeah, thank you. Because, you know, in there it says the second year is from the trust fund. So I made an assumption from that language that it was used for something else. On the second year, Ms. Nash, do you know what they're focusing on, what cover crops, and do you have an idea of where up in the Red River Valley they would be doing that? And if you don't, we can take it offline. But I would like to know more details because a large part of 12A is sugar beets.
Ms. Nash?
Madam Chair and Representative Becker, I'd be happy to follow up with you on that.
And thank I just you, have Ms. a Nash. Comment about the bill. Even though there are some good projects in there, there's two things that I think why I will not be supporting them. Is the property tax situation, as we are in Greater Minnesota, we constantly fight loss of property, and that raises property taxes on us remaining taxpayers. This is one of the reasons we have seen influx. Literally, if in my district, we have more new homes, more people moving in North Dakota and South Dakota. So this is a great concern. We have to look at ways to lower that. If we are going to be buying property through public dollars, we have to find a way to lower property tax. Plus, we also have to find a way that competition is a good thing, and no one can outbid the state. And the second thing is, just like a Representative Heisman brought up, constitutionally, this money was used for clean water. And I know there are people on this committee that will disagree with me, and I respect their opinion, but constantly I have not seen real evidence where it's just clean water. Wastewater treatment plants in communities across the state, large, small, and medium size, we need to invest more into those projects because that's real returns right away that can keep our waters clean, keep it safer, keep our environment. Because at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons we all serve on this committee, because we significantly appreciate the resources in Minnesota. And I have one of the largest geographic districts. So my constituents understand the importance of protecting the environment. I hear that a lot. I know that might be contrary to some of the beliefs that we hear from counterparts in the metro area. We want to protect our environment. So the wastewater, we have to look at, I guess I'm putting out a little bit of olive leaf to the chair, Chair Hansen. We've got to look at ways to invest into that. That's not coming out of the general fund. because when this Constitution Amendment was passed, it's talking about clean water. We need to clean up our waters that's coming out of our towns and cities. So those are two of the reasons why I will be voting no, and I do appreciate everybody's time. Thank you.
Chair Madam Chair. Yep, go ahead.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Backer. And I'd ask you to take a look where I would return the olive branch as well, that two of the components that we have in here do relate to wastewater. One is the research, and it doesn't say wastewater in the metro, it says wastewater. So the COVID-19 research, I think the researchers, when they presented that, indicated that they'd be looking statewide. And there's some amazing research that's coming out about how that can be used to maybe identify where there have been issues and how we can help respond to that. So that's one component that's wastewater research. In terms of wastewater, we also have over $1 million that would go towards those energy demonstration grants. And again, that's statewide. So it's not going to pipes, it's not going to the program, it's not going to building that infrastructure, but it's a demonstration grant that would be available to help reduce cost in the ongoing, because energy use, and if you, and I know you've been to wastewater treatment plants, the technology hasn't changed that much for many years. And if we can show that we can reduce energy costs there, that would help out overall wherever Minnesotans are. So I think that's kind of an exciting opportunity that can be used. And I was hoping that that would be coming, reaching a little ways or both ways to try to find some common ground. So that's just what I'd say there. So
thank you, Chair Hansen. Next up, we have Representative Becker Finn and then Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I just want to speak to, we are legislating in unprecedented times. I chaired my first judiciary and civil law hearing this morning at 8:30 a.m., and we also passed a bill out of committee. So it may not be the usual flow of our work in regular times, but things were so disrupted this spring. I think it's entirely appropriate that we get to work as soon as we can, especially when we have the language drafted, we have it ready to go, it's been introduced. You know, this is exactly, I think, what the public wants to see us doing is getting work done. And I'm thankful to Chair Hansen for doing the work to communicate with the Senate and hopefully move this issue forward. And then I just wanted to say too that this whole strategy of holding this bill hostage, essentially, it is really problematic, and it is absolutely not what the public wants to see us doing. I think, when the voters passed this amendment to set up this trust fund for this purpose, it wasn't. We're going to spend these dollars unless one party really disagrees with the governor about something and then decides to use some unrelated thing as a to use this bill is, that's not at all what the voters wanted when we passed this constitutional amendment. And I don't think that's what our constituents want us to be doing now. So we can have that whole conversation about clean cars, and we should have that conversation probably in the Energy Committee. One of the most frustrating things I'll say is, we have some new members, but, one of the most frustrating things about this job is, especially someone who's an attorney and trained in logic, is the lack of logic. And this is a really good example of there's no logical reason to tie these two things together. It was a strategic decision, but I think it doesn't reflect the will of the people of Minnesota. And I am hopeful that we can move past this idea of tying these two issues together, because we need to get these dollars out in the community and to all these good programs. So thank you, Chair Hansen, for moving this and giving it the priority that it should be given.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. We have on the list next, Representative Ackland. Is it Ackland or Auckland? I want to make sure I'm saying that correctly.
It's Ackland.
Ackland. Okay, Representative Ackland, you're next.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a new member, my question is fairly simple, but it the one red flag that has gone up is this purchase of land. I know the farmers in my community, when the bumper strips were instituted, it caused quite an issue with paying them. And it's fairly simple, but it the one red flag. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay, my sound went away. Somebody's name is on there, Natasha Wright, for some reason. I don't know.
Yep, we got her muted, so go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you. Anyway, so my question is about the land. I want, if I were to vote for this, I want to be able to explain to my rural community, largely rural community, how the purchase of this land would take place. Would the question that I've heard is that there's not enough input from the people that the land is being bought from, and how would that affect our property, affect property taxes in my district?
Madam Chair.
Chair Hansen.
Maybe Commissioner Meyer could give an abbreviated how land is purchased. These would be for scientific and natural areas. Generally, the Outdoor Heritage Council recommends purchases for wildlife management areas. And generally, the LCCMR has dealt with scientific and natural areas. And there's a whole system up for that's been established for payment in lieu of taxes or PILT. So for new members of the committee, this is the first time you'll hear the phrase PILT, but it will not be the last. If Commissioner Meyer is still on, if he could give a little discussion about how land is purchased and how local governments are compensated with PILT.
Commissioner Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Madam Chair, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Thank you for the question. The dollars in this bill, as Chairman Hansen said, are for scientific and natural area acquisitions, which are pieces of property that are defined within the Outdoor Recreation Act in Chapter 86A that have high scientific biodiversity or some rare and unique either plant community, animal community, or natural feature that we're trying to protect that's representative of the state. Our acquisition process works very closely with county boards and local units of government. We work with them on the beginning of identification of a parcel through the actual acquisition of that. We work with the landowners, the private landowners. We talked a little bit about our appraisal process. It would be the same as if you were going to buy a piece of property to build a home on, or a farmstead, or some hunting property. We work with the landowner. We hire an appraisal that's on a certified list of appraisers. We have that price. We sit down with the landowner, let them know what the price is and how much we can pay, which is usually that appraised value. And then if the private landowner is willing, we will perform that transaction openly and transparently. We don't go to neighbors most of the time. It's not our duty to talk to the neighbors about their neighbor's personal business, right? This is a transaction, a willing transaction between a private landowner and the state. We go to the county board to make sure that they understand what we're doing. If they have a no net gain resolution, which many counties do, I shouldn't say many, some counties have no net gain resolutions, then if the acquisition is valuable enough, we will look at what land does the DNR have to dispose of to acquire this new land. But we don't do that too often, because most of the time the lands that we've acquired, we purchased for very specific reasons. But we do have some lands that we've received through administrative transition, say from the Department of Administration or other units of government or previous administrative sites that are not parts of the Outdoor Recreation Act that we do look to sell whenever we can. We do an annual land sales as well. Once the transaction has taken place, the counties are compensated with payment in lieu of taxes. It's a program that's carried through by the legislature, appropriating money to the DNR that then we pass through the Department of Revenue. That in acquired lands, so lands that we buy willingly, that payment is equal to 1.75% of the appraised land value. actually, I take that back. It's 0.75% of the appraised land value. So in many times, that payment is equal to or more than the property taxes that the county has been receiving on that parcel. So a lot of times they are a little bit on the plus side, or at least we try to keep them whole as we acquire lands. So it's an open and transparent process between a willing seller and the state of Minnesota for specific purposes. We aren't out there buying land willy-nilly. We have a scientific and natural area acquisition plan that is developed with stakeholders and residents and citizens throughout the state of Minnesota, just as our wildlife management area plan or aquatic management area plan. And we look at acquiring units, in this case for scientific and natural areas, that represent the best of the best of the habitat that we want to preserve and protect for generations to come, to see what that land looks like and how it functions. Madam Chair, thank you. I think that's a high-level overview. If there's any questions, I can certainly answer them.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. Representative Ackland, did you have any follow-up questions? Yep, you'll have to unmute. Yep, there you go.
All right, go ahead. Thank you for the explanation. That was helpful. Just one last question. Are any of these properties already like pre-selected that you have your eye on? Do we know? Can we look at a map and see what areas that you really have focused on already?
Commissioner Meyer?
Madam Chair, we certainly can provide you what information we're looking at and what properties we would be proposing to do. Obviously, since we don't have the monies available, I don't have any signed agreements or anything like that at all, but we know what we're targeting, where these possible dollars would go to. We could provide that information to you.
Commissioner, I see Representative Heinzman, but I'm going to go to Representative Fisher since he hasn't had a chance to ask a question yet. Representative Fisher, if you want to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine's a little bit more of a comment, thanking Representative Hansen for getting this bill up and going again, particularly in the area of the resources needed to address our water issues here in the state of Minnesota. It's highly important that we continue the work and funding the County Groundwater Atlas Program so that we can have a better idea throughout the state how our water works between the surface and the underlying aquifers. The important work that's being done to take a look at PFAS contamination in our waters, and a high part is the program to continue funding the highly saline waste from municipal water treatment plants. This is an area that we know is raising in this state as we have more and more chlorides starting to get into our water systems. And more importantly, as we have more plants, particularly rural wastewater plants that have got businesses in their communities that generate quite a bit of highly saline waste, and be able to find a more efficient way so that these communities will be able to continue providing these services at a very in a very efficient way. So I want to thank Chair Hansen for continuing to push this bill, particularly these important efforts that will help protect our waters in the future.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Heinzman, you're up next. You want to go ahead and.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I'm always interested in the conversation that we have in this committee. And I'm going to have to respond to Representative Becker Finn's comments about the jurisdiction of this committee. There is an element of what we're discussing today, and it's the effect of the California CARS push from the MPCA. And it has affected our bill. So that's why it's a part of the conversation today. I'm not sure if that's clear. Respectfully, Representative Becker Finn, you and I think we have had a friendly conversation. We agree on about five things. We're doing the best we can to get that number up. But there's no question we disagree on this point. While the Energy Committee should definitely have a say on issues relative to California CARS, MPCA, as you know, Jamie, Representative Becker Finn, there's no question that MPCA is fully within the jurisdiction of this committee's purview. And I think when we're talking about what the voters want, there's also no question that they want a process that they can watch and they can participate in. And when MPCA decides that they're going to bring in standards from California and cram that down the throats of Minnesotans without so much as a single vote from this legislature, that's going to be a huge problem. And there's no question that we're going to have an ongoing conversation in this committee about that, because MPCA is going to be coming to this committee and they're going to want to visit with us. And Greater Minnesota wants to know why this issue is moving through MPCA as opposed to through the legislature, something that is so drastically going to affect the lives of hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans. We understand the rules process. We can have a long conversation about that. We're all familiar with the rules process. But at the same time, this is a huge overarching issue. And I'm glad you brought up, Representative Becker-Finn, the idea that the Energy Committee should hear something like that. Well, they haven't. They haven't heard the California CARS bill because it doesn't exist. And I see you smiling when I mention California CARS, but it's important that Minnesotans understand that we're not taking California's standards just sitting down. Apparently, there's sort of this expectation that this committee shouldn't talk about this. And I really beg to differ. You know, there's a huge conversation to be had. And I hope that all of Minnesota is watching, because Democrats don't want to talk about this issue in this committee or probably any other committee. It needs to be discussed. And I think MPCA should hit the brakes, come to the legislature, and talk to us about why they're doing this in the way that they are. So that's out there. And I apologize to the committee for burning up time. We're talking about the LCCMR and the Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund. But Representative Becker-Finn brought it up, and it had to be responded to.
I saw Representative Eklund's hand up. Representative Eklund, did you have a...
Madam Chair, could I respond?
Yep. Can I just see if Representative Eklund has something before his hand went up and then went down?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will let Representative Becker-Finn talk. I think enough has been said about this, and let her respond to it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Eklund. Representative Becker-Finn, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to correct the record. My comment was not about the jurisdiction of the committee. I'm fully aware of the jurisdiction of this committee over MPCA. The problem, however, the fact that the words California CARS has been said so many times during this committee is exactly the problem. The problem is connecting an unrelated thing where there's disagreement with the executive branch in order to hold this very good bill hostage from moving forward. This should have been passed in 2020. It should already be law. These dollars should already be out in the community. And that's the problem. That's where I think the voters and our constituents don't want to see us tying unrelated things together as bargaining chips to stop good programs from being funded. So that is where I'm not arguing about the jurisdiction of the committee. Like that's clear. But the focus should be on this bill. And if it's a good bill, then we should vote for it no matter how you care, what you care about clean car standards.
Any other member questions, and specifically to the bill that we are talking about, please? Anything else? Member questions or comments? I don't see any further discussion. So Representative Chair Hansen, if you have any closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good discussion. I think it's the first of many we will have. And I would say, Representative Heintzman, that Chair Long will be discussing the California CARS standards in that committee. Members and Minnesotans, I think you've seen a little bit of how challenging it can be to pass things, but I want us to put that behind us. I'm asking if you haven't co-authored the bill yet at a minimum, I ask for your vote this afternoon. I ask for your vote to support this bill because I think it's a good bill. We're running it separate. Doesn't have anything else attached to it, and I'm hopeful that we could get it to become law. beyond actually voting for it today. And Representative Backer, I haven't given up on you yet. I'd like to try to persuade you, if I could, to vote for it, because I think it is a good bill, but also to co-author the bill and to try to show that we have strong support for this bill as it moves through the process. I hope we will be able to pass it this afternoon, and I'd appreciate your support.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 30, as amended, be re-referred to Ways and Means, and we'll have the clerk take the roll on the vote.
Hansen, Rick.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasliwick, Amy.
Aye.
Wasliwick, aye. Heintzeman, Josh.
Heintzeman, aye.
Heintzeman, aye. Akom, Patty.
Akom, aye.
Akom, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Becker, Finn, aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Ackland, Rob.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Green, no.
Green, no. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. That is 17 ayes and 2 noes.
All right, and with that, the motion prevails, and House File 30 is on its way to Ways and Means. Chair Hansen, did you have any other announcements?
Yes, thank you, Chair Wozlawick. Kind of the roadmap ahead, we are going to hear from the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Science Museum on Thursday. That we had hoped to have one of the other bills from last year, the lands bill, which is relatively non-controversial, but we have not received the jackets on that yet. We're hoping that those will come. I am in my office, so I've kind of been waiting for Santa to come by with bill jackets, but Santa hasn't arrived yet. So bills that we would look to consider that are left over from last year, we would have the lands bill. We would have the dry cleaner agreement that we passed last year. And we may have other things where there would be some common ground. So our idea would be if those jackets come and we're able to get them introduced in time so they can be scheduled, that we try to pass some of those what we would view as non-controversial bills. And Representative Heintzeman, I'll work closely with you on scheduling those as they become available. We will start on hearing the other agencies in our purview. Maybe Mr. Strohmeyer, if you would just talk about the calendar next week and a little bit about timing when we will be posting materials so they're available for the public and for the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we'll next Tuesday, well, as Thursday, we'll have this upcoming Thursday, we'll have the Science Museum and the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Next Tuesday, we'll have an overview from the DNR. And then up to that point, we're still scheduling overviews. As for process, we're currently working on the committee rules. We will send that out to members as soon as we have those finalized. But for the meantime, we are asking people presenting to get materials to us as much advance as they can, at a minimum 24 hours before the hearing. And like you saw with this hearing, we will post those and send those out to members a day in advance. So that's kind of what we're working under, and I'm happy to answer any other questions. Thank you very much.
Any final questions on schedule or anything from members? All right. Well, thank you, members, and the public, for participating today. Good discussion. And with that, we are adjourned.